This is Audible.
Hachette Digital presents Consider Phlebas by Ian M. Banks. Chapter 8. The Ends of Invention. Maybe she's a clone, Hawser thought. Maybe it's coincidence. He sat on the floor of Craiglin's cabin, his cabin now, staring at the locker doors in the far wall, aware that he needed to do something, but not sure what it ought to be. His brain wasn't able to take all the knocks and shocks it had had. He needed to sit and think for a moment. He tried telling himself he was mistaken, that it wasn't really her, that he was tired and confused and getting paranoid, seeing things. But he knew it was Balveda, though sufficiently altered so that probably only a close friend or a changer could possibly recognize her. But definitely her, alive and well, and probably armed to the teeth. He got up mechanically, still staring straight ahead. He took off the wet clothes and went out of the cabin, down to the wash area, where he left the clothes to dry and cleaned himself up. Back in the cabin, he found a robe and put it on. He started inspecting the small, packed space and finally came across a small voice recorder. He flicked it back and listened.
Including Yelson, Craiglin's voice said from the small speaker in the machine, who I guess was in her relationship with Hawser Gobachill. She's been pretty abrupt, and I don't think I've had the support from her, which I ought to get. I'll have a word with her if it goes on, but for now, during the repairs and such, there doesn't seem much point. I'm not putting off. I just think we'll see how she shapes up after the orbital's blown and we're on our way. Now, this new woman, Gravant. She's all right. I get the impression she might need a bit of ordering around. Seems to need discipline. I don't think she'll have too much conflict with anybody. Yelson especially, I was worried about, but I don't think... I think it'll be fine. But you can never tell with women, of course, so... But I like her. I think she's got class, and maybe... I don't know, maybe she could make a good number two if she shapes up. I really need more people. Things haven't gone all that well recently, but I think I've been... They've let me down. Jandrilla Jelly, obviously, and I don't know, I'll see if maybe I can do something about him, because he's really sort of been... He's betrayed me, that's the way. That's what it is, I think. Anybody would agree. So maybe I'll have a word with Gausel at the game, assuming he arrives. I don't think the guy's really up to standard, and I'll tell Gausel as much because we're both in the same business, and I know that he'll have heard, well, he'll listen to what I have to say because he knows about the responsibilities of leadership and just, the way I do. Anyway, I'll do some more recruiting after the game, and after the GSV takes off, there'll be some time. We have enough time still to run in this bay, and I'll put the word out. There's bound to be a lot of people ready to sign on. Mustn't forget about the shuttle tomorrow. I'm sure I can get the price down. I could just win at the game, of course. The small voice from the speaker laughed, a tinny echo, and just be incredibly rich and... The laughter came again, distorted. And not give a fuck about any of this crap anymore. Shit, just give the cat away and, well, sell it and retire. But we'll see. The voice faded. Hawser switched off the machine in the silence. He put it down where he had found it and rubbed the ring on the small finger of his right hand. Then he took off the robe and put his suit on. It started talking to him. He told it to turn its voice off. He looked at himself in the reverser field on the locked doors, drew himself up, made sure the plasma pistol strapped to his thigh was switched on, pushed the pains and tiredness to the back of his mind, then went out of the cabin and up the corridor to the mess. Yelson and the woman who was Balveda were sitting talking in the long room at the far end of the table under the screen which had been turned off. They looked up when he came in. He went over and sat a couple of seats down from Yelson, who looked at his suit and said, "We going somewhere?" "Maybe,"
Hawser said, looking briefly at her, then switching his gaze to the Balveda woman, smiling and saying,
"I'm sorry, Miss Gravant, but I'm afraid, having reconsidered your application, I have to turn you down. I'm sorry, but there's no place for you on the cat. I hope you understand."
He clasped his hands on the table and grinned again. Balveda, The more he looked, the surer he was that it was her, looked crestfallen. Her mouth opened slightly. She looked from Horsa to Yalsin, then back again. Yalsin was frowning deeply.
But,
Balveda began.
What the hell are you talking about?
Yalsin said angrily.
You can't just...
You see, Horsa smiled. I've decided that we need to cut down on the numbers on board and...
What?
Yalsin exploded, slapping the table with the palm of her hand.
That's six of us left. What the hell are six of us meant to do?
Her voice trailed off, then came back lower and slower, her head twisting to one side, her eyes narrowing as she looked at him.
Or have we just struck lucky in, a game of chance, perhaps, and don't want to cut in more directions than absolutely necessary?
Horsa looked briefly at Yalsin again, smiled and said,
No, but you see, I've just rehired one of our ex-members, and that does alter the plans a bit.
The place I'd intended to slot Miss Gravant into in the ship's company is now filled.
You got Jandril Jelly to come back after what you called him?
Laughed Yalsin, stretching back in her seat. Horsa shook his head.
No, my dear, he said, as I would have been able to tell you if you hadn't kept interrupting. I just met our friend Mr. Gobichal in Evenath, and he's keen to rejoin.
Horsa?
Yalsin seemed to shake a little, her voice on an edge of tension, and he could see her trying to control herself.
Oh, gods,
a small voice inside him said. Why does this hurt so much? Yalsin said,
Is he alive? Are you sure it was him? Craiglin, are you?
Horsa switched his gaze rapidly from one woman to the other. Yalsin was leaning forward over the table, her eyes glittering in the messroom light, her fists clenched. Her lean body seemed tensed, the golden down on her dark skin shining. Balveda looked uncertain and confused. Horsa saw her start to bite her lip, then stop.
I wouldn't kid you about it, Yalsin, Horsa assured her. Horsa is alive and well and not very far away.
Horsa looked at the repeater screen on his suit cuff where the time showed.
As a matter of fact, I'm meeting him at one of the port reception spheres in, just before the GSV takes off. He said he had one or two things to work out in the city first. He said to say, he hoped you were still betting on him. He shrugged, something like that.
You're not kidding,
Yalsin said, her face creasing with a smile. She shook her head, put a hand through her hair, slapped the table softly a couple of times.
Oh,
she said, then sat back again in her seat. She looked from the woman to the man and shrugged, silent.
So you see, Gravant, you just aren't needed right now,
Horsa told Balveda. The culture agent opened her mouth, but it was Yalsin who spoke first, coughing quickly and then saying,
Oh, let us stay, Craiglin. What difference does it make?
The difference, Yalsin, Horsa said carefully, thinking hard about Craiglin, is that I am captain of this ship.
Yalsin seemed about to say something, but instead she turned to Balveda and spread her hands. She sat back, one hand picking at the edge of the table, her eyes lowered. She was trying not to smile too much.
Well, Captain, Balveda said, rising from her seat, you do know best. I'll get my gear.
She walked quickly from the mess, her footsteps merged with others, and Horsa and Yalsin both heard some muffled words. In a moment, Duralo, Wubslin and Avager, gaily dressed and looking flushed and happy, piled into the mess, the older man with his arm around the small, plump woman.
Our captain!
Avager shouted. Duralo held one of his hands at her shoulder. She smiled. Wubslin waved dreamily. The stocky engineer looked drunk.
Been at the wars, I see,
Avager went on, staring at Horsa's face, which still showed signs of being in a fight, despite his internal attempts to minimize the damage.
What has Gravant done, Craiglin?
Duralo squeaked. She seemed merry too, and her voice was even higher than he remembered it.
Nothing, Horsa said, smiling at the three mercenaries. But we're getting Horsa Gobichal back from the dead, so I decided we didn't need her.
Horsa?
Wubslin said, his large mouth opening wide in an almost exaggerated expression of surprise. Duralo looked past Horsa at Yalsin, the look on her face saying, Is this true? Through her grin. Yalsin shrugged and looked happily, hopefully, still slightly suspiciously, at the man she thought was Craiglin.
He'll be coming aboard shortly before the Ends leaves, Horsa said. He had some sort of business in the city. Maybe something shady.
Horsa smiled in the condescending way Craiglin sometimes had.
Who knows?
There,
Wubslin said, looking unsteadily at Avager over Dorolo's stooped frame.
Maybe that guy was looking for Hawser. Maybe we should warn him.
What guy? Where? Hawser asked. He's seeing things, Avager said, waving one hand. Too much liver wine.
Rubbish,
Woobslin said loudly, looking from Avager to Hawser and nodding.
Underdrawn.
He held both hands out in front of his face, palms together, then separated them by about a quarter metre.
Little bugger. No bigger than that.
Where?
Hawser shook his head. Why do you think somebody might be after Hawser?
Out there, under the travel tube, Avager said, while Woobslin was saying,
Way he came out of that capsule like he expected to be in a fight any second, and, oh, I can just tell. That guy was police or something.
What about Mip?
Asked Dorolo. Hawser was silent for a second, frowning at nothing and nobody in particular.
Did Hawser mention Mip?
Dorolo asked him.
Mip? He said, looking at Dorolo. No.
He shook his head. No, Mip didn't make it.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Dorolo said. Look, Hawser said, staring at Avager and Woobslin. You think there's somebody out there looking for one of us?
A man.
Woobslin nodded slowly. And a little tiny, really mean-looking drone. With a chill, Hawser recalled the insect, which had settled momentarily on his wrist in the small bay outside, just before he had boarded the cat. The culture, he knew, had machines, artificial bugs that size. Hawser said, pursing his lips. He nodded to himself, then looked at Yalson. Go and make sure Gravant gets off the ship quickly, all right? He stood up and got out of the way while Yalson moved. She went down the corridor to the cabins. Hawser looked at Woobslin and motioned the engineer forward toward the bridge with his eyes.
You two stay here, he said quietly to Avager and Dorolo.
Slowly, they let go of each other and sat down in a couple of seats. Hawser went through to the bridge. He pointed Woobslin to the engineer's seat and sat down in the pilot's. Woobslin sighed heavily. Hawser closed the door, then quickly reeled through all he had learned about the procedures on the bridge during the first weeks he'd been aboard the cat. He was reaching forward to open the communicator channels when something moved under the console near his feet. He froze. Woobslin peered down, then bent with an audible effort and stuck his big head down between his legs. Hawser smelled drink.
Haven't you finished yet?
Woobslin's muffled voice said.
They took me off to another job. I only just got back,
wailed a small, thin, artificial voice. Hawser sat back in his seat and looked under the console. A drone, about two-thirds of the size of the one which had escorted him from the elevator to the cat's bay, was disentangling itself from a jumble of fine cables protruding from an open inspection hatch.
What, Hawser said, is that?
Oh, Woobslin said, wearily belching. Same one that's been here, you remember.
Come on, you, he said to the machine. The captain wants to do a communication test.
Look,
the little machine said, its synthesized voice full of exasperation.
I have finished. I'm just tidying everything away.
We'll get a move on,
Woobslin said. He withdrew his head from underneath the console and looked apologetically at Hawser.
Sorry, Kirklin. Never mind, never mind.
Hawser waved his hand. He powered up the communicator.
He
looked at Woobslin.
Who's controlling traffic movements around here? I've forgotten who to ask for. What if I want the bay doors opened?
Traffic. Doors opened. Woobslin looked at Hawser with a puzzled expression. He shrugged and said,
Well, just traffic control, I suppose, like when we came in. Right, Hawser said.
He flicked the switch on the console and said,
Traffic control, this is...
His voice trailed off. He'd no idea what Kraklin had called the cat instead of its real name. He hadn't got that as part of the information he'd bought, and it was one of the many things he had meant to learn once he'd accomplished the most immediate task of getting Balveda off the ship, and with luck, following a false trail. But the news that there might be somebody looking for him in this bay, or anybody for that matter, had rattled him. He said,
This is the craft in Small Bay 27492. I want immediate clearance to leave the bay and the GSV. We'll quit the orbital independently.
Woobslin stared at Hawser.
This is Evenouthport Traffic Control, GSV Temporary Section. One moment, Small Bay 27492, said the speakers set in Hawser and Woobslin's seat headrests.
Hawser turned to Woobslin, switching off the communicator send button.
This thing is ready to fly, isn't it?
What? Fly?
Woobslin looked perplexed. He scratched his chest, looked down at the drone still working to stuff the wires back under the console.
I suppose so, but... Great.
Hawser started switching everything on, motors included. He noticed the bank of screens carrying information about the bow laser flickering on, along with everything else. At least Craiklin had had that repaired.
Fly,
Wubslin repeated. He scratched his chest again and turned toward Hawser.
Did you say fly?
Yes, we're leaving.
Hawser's hands flicked over the buttons and sensor switches, adjusting the systems of the waking ship as though he really had been doing it for years.
We'll need a tug,
Wubslin said. Hawser knew the engineer was right. The cat's anti-gravity was only strong enough to produce an internal field. The warp units would blow so close to, in fact inside, a mass as great as the end's, and you couldn't reasonably use the fusion motors in an enclosed space.
We'll get one. I'll tell them it's an emergency. I'll say we've got a bomb aboard or something.
Hawser watched the main screen come on, filling the previously blank bulkhead in front of him and Wubslin with a view of the rear of the small bay. Wubslin got his own monitor screen to display a complicated plan which Hawser eventually identified as a map of their level of the JSV's vast interior. He only glanced at it at first, then ignored the view on the main screen and looked more carefully at the plan, and finally put a hollow of the JSV's whole internal layout onto the main screen, quickly memorizing all he could.
What?
Wubslin paused, belched again, rubbed his belly through his tunic and said,
What about Hawser?
We'll pick him up later, Hawser said, still studying the layout of the GSV. I made other arrangements in case I couldn't meet him when I said.
Hawser punched the transmit button again.
Traffic control, this is Small Bay 27492. I need emergency clearance. Repeat, I need emergency clearance and a tug straight away. I have a malfunctioning fusion generator I can't close down. Repeat, nuclear fusion generator breakdown, going critical.
What?
A small voice screeched. Something banged into Hawser's knee, and the drone working under the console wobbled quickly into view, festooned with cables like a streamer-draped partygoer.
What did you say?
Shut up and get off the ship now,
Hawser told it, turning up the gain on the receiver circuits. A hissing noise filled the bridge.
With pleasure,
the drone said, and shook itself to get rid of the cables looped around its casing.
As usual, I'm the last to be told what's going on, but I know I don't want to stick around this,
it was muttering, when the hangar lights went out. At first, Hawser thought the screen had blown, but he slid the wavelength control up, and a dim outline of the bay reappeared, showing its appearance on infrared.
Oh-ho, said the drone, turning first to the screen, then looking back at Hawser. You lot did pay your rent, didn't you?
Dead, Wubslin announced. The drone got rid of the last of its cables. Hawser looked sharply at the engineer.
What?
Wubslin pointed at the transceiver controls in front of him.
Dead.
Somebody's cut us off from traffic control. A shudder ran through the ship. A light blinked, indicating that the main hold lift had just slammed up automatically. A draft briefly stirred the air in the flight deck, then died. More lights started flashing on the console.
Shit, Hawser said. Now what?
Well, goodbye, chaps,
the drone said hurriedly. It shot past them, sucked the door open, and whooshed down the corridor, heading for the hangar stairwell.
Pressure drop,
Wubslin said to himself, scratching his head for a change and knotting his brows as he looked at the screens in front of him.
Craiklin,
Yalsin's voice shouted from the seat headrest speakers. A light on the console showed that she was calling from the hangar.
What? Hawser snapped.
What the hell's going on?
Yalsin shouted.
We were nearly crushed. The air is going from the small bay, and the hangar lift just emergencied on us. What's happening?
I'll explain, Hawser said.
His mouth was dry, and he felt as though there was a lump of ice in his guts.
Is Ms. Gravant still with you?
Of course she's still fucking with me.
Right. Come back up to the mess room right away, both of you.
Craiklin,
Yalsin began. Then another voice cut in, starting from a distance, but quickly coming closer to the mic.
Closed? Closed? Why is this lift door closed? What is going on this vessel? Hello? Bridge? Captain?
A sharp tap-tap noise came from the headrest speakers, and the synthesized voice went on.
Why am I being obstructed? Let me off the ship. Get out of the way, you idiot,
Yalsin said. Then, it's that goddamn drone again.
You and Gravant, get up here, Hawser repeated. Now.
Hawser closed down the hangar comm circuit. He wheeled out of the seat and patted Wubslin on the shoulder.
Strap in. Get us ready to roll. Everything.
Then he swung through the open door. Avager was in the corridor, coming from the mess to the bridge. He opened his mouth to speak, but Hawser squeezed quickly past him.
Not now, Avager.
He put his right glove to the lock on the armory door. It clicked open, Hawser looked inside.
I was only going to ask, what the hell's going on?
Hawser completed the old man's sentence for him as he lifted the biggest neural stun pistol he could see, slammed the armory doors shut, and paced quickly down the corridor, through the mess room where Dorilo was sitting asleep in a chair, and into the corridor through the accommodation section. He switched the gun on, turned its power control to maximum, then held it behind his back. The drone appeared first, flying up the steps and darting along the corridor at eye level.
Captain, I really must put...
Hawser kicked a door open, caught the beveled front of the drone as it came toward him, and threw the machine into the cabin. He slammed the door shut. Voices were coming up the steps from the hangar. He held onto the handle of the cabin door. It was pulled hard, then thumped.
This is outrageous, a distant tinny voice wailed.
Cricklin, Yalson said, as her head appeared at the top of the steps. Hawser smiled, readying the gun he held behind his back. The door resounded again, shaking his hand.
Let me out!
Cricklin, what is going on? Yalson said, coming along the corridor. Alveda was almost up the stairs, carrying a large kit bag over her shoulder.
I'm going to lose my temper!
The door shook again. A whine, high and urgent, came from behind Yalson, from Balveda's kit bag, then a static-like crackle. Yalson didn't hear the high-pitched whine, which was an alarm. Hawser, though, was distantly aware of Dorilo staring somewhere behind him in the messroom. At the burst of static, which was a highly compressed message or signal of some sort, Yalson started to turn back to Balveda. At the same moment, Hawser leapt forward, taking his hand off the cabin door handle and bringing the heavy stun gun round to bear on Balveda. The culture woman was already dropping the kit bag, one hand flashing, so fast even Hawser could hardly follow the movement, down to her side. Hawser threw himself into the space between Yalson and the corridor bulkhead, knocking the woman mercenary to one side. At the same time, with a big stun gun pointing straight at Balveda's face, he pulled the trigger. The weapon hummed in his hand as he continued forward, dropping. He tried to keep the gun pointing at Balveda's head all the way down. He hit the deck just before the sagging culture agent did. Yalson was still staggering back after being thumped against the far bulkhead. Hawser lay on the deck, watching Balveda's feet and legs for a second, then he quickly scrambled up. Saw Balveda move groggily, her red-haired head scraping on the deck's surface, her dark eyes opening briefly. He pulled the stun gun trigger again, keeping it depressed and pointing the gun at the woman's head. She shook spastically for a second, saliva drooling from one corner of her mouth, then went limp. The red bandana rolled off her head.
Are you crazy?
Yalson screamed. Hawser turned to her.
Her name isn't Gravant. It's Peristek Balveda, and she's an agent in the Culture's Special Circumstances section. That's their euphemism for military intelligence, in case you didn't know, he said.
Yalson was backed up almost to the messroom entrance, her eyes full of fear, her hands clutching at the surface of the bulkhead on either side of her. Hawser went up to her. She shrank from him, and he sensed her getting ready to strike out. He stopped short of her, turned the stun gun round, and handed it to her, grip first.
If you don't believe me, we'll probably all end up dead, he said, edging the gun forward toward her hands. She took it eventually. I'm serious, he told her. Search her for weapons, then get her into the mess and strap her into a seat. Tie her hands down tight and her legs, then strap in yourself. We're leaving. I'll explain later.
He started to go past her, then he turned and looked into her eyes.
Oh, and keep stunning her every now and again, on maximum power. Special circumstances are very tough.
He turned and went toward the mess room. He heard the stun gun click.
Cricklin,
Yalson said. He stopped and turned round again. She was pointing the gun straight at him, holding it in both hands and level with his eyes. Hawser sighed and shook his head.
Don't, he said.
What about Hawser?
He's safe, I swear it. But he'll be dead if we don't get out of here now. And if she wakes up.
He nodded past Yalson at the long, inert form of Balveda. He turned again, then walked into the mess, the back of his head and the nape of his neck tingling with anticipation. Nothing happened. Dorilo looked up from the table and said,
What was that noise?
As Hawser went past.
What noise? Hawser said as he went through to the bridge.
Yalson watched Craiglin's back as he walked through the messroom. He said something to Dorilo, then he was through to the bridge. She let the stun gun down slowly. It hung in one hand. She looked at the gun thoughtfully and said to herself quietly,
Yalson, my girl, there are times when I think you're a little too loyal.
She raised the gun again as the cabin door opened just a crack and a small voice said,
"Is it safe out there yet?"
Yalson grimaced, pushed the door open and looked at the drone, which was retreating further into the cabin. She nodded her head to the side and said, "Get out here and give me a hand with this bard, you liverless piece of clockwork."
"Wake up!"
Hawser kicked Wubslin's leg as he swung into his chair. Avager was sitting in the third seat in the flight deck, looking anxiously at the screens and controls. Wubslin jumped, then looked round with bleary eyes.
He said then, I was just resting my eyes.
Hawser pulled out the cat's manual controls from the recess in the edge of the console. Avager looked at them with apprehension.
"Just how hard did you knock your head?" he said to Hawser.
Hawser smiled coldly at him. He scanned the screens as fast as he could and threw the safety switches on the ship's fusion motors. He tried traffic control once more. The small bay was still dark. The outside pressure gauge registered zero. Wubslin was talking to himself as he checked over the craft's monitoring systems.
"Avager," Hawser said, not looking at the older man, "I think you'd better strap in."
"What for?"
Avager asked quietly, measuredly.
"We can't go anywhere. We can't move. We're stuck here until Tug arrives to take us out, aren't we?"
"Of course we are," Hawser said,
adjusting the readying controls of the fusion motors and putting the ship leg controls on automatic. He turned and looked at Avager.
"Tell you what, why don't you go and get that new recruit's kit bag, take it down to the hangar and shove it into a vac tube?"
"What?"
Avager said, his already creased face becoming more lined as he frowned.
"I thought she was leaving."
"She was, but whoever is trying to keep us in here started evacuating the air from the small bay before she could get off. Now, I want you to take her kit bag and all the other gear she may have left lying around and stow it in a vac tube, all right?"
Avager got up from the seat slowly, looking at Hawser with a tense, worried expression on his face.
"All right."
He started to leave the bridge, then hesitated, looking back at Hawser.
"Creaklin, why am I putting her kit bag in the vac tube?"
"Because there's almost certainly a very powerful bomb in it, that's why. Now, get down there and do it."
Avager nodded and left, looking even less happy. Hawser turned back to the controls. They were almost ready. Wubslin was still talking to himself and hadn't strapped in properly, but he seemed to be doing his part competently enough, despite frequent belches and pauses to scratch his chest and head. Hawser knew he was putting the next bit off, but it had to be done. He pressed the ident button.
"This is Kraiklin," he said, and coughed.
"Identification complete," the console said immediately.
Hawser wanted to shout, or at least sag in his seat with relief, but he hadn't the time to do either, and Wubslin would have thought it a little strange. So might the ship's computer, for that matter. Some machines were programmed to watch for signs of joy or relief after the formal identification was over. So he did nothing to celebrate, just brought the fusion motor primers up to operating temperature.
"Captain!"
The small drone dashed back into the bridge, coming to a halt between Wubslin and Hawser.
"You will let me off the ship at once and report the irregularities taking place aboard immediately, or..."
"Or what?"
Hawser said, watching the temperature in the cat's fusion motor soar.
"If you think you can get off this ship, you're welcome to try. Probably culture agents would blow you to dust, even if you did get out."
"Culture agents?" the small machine said with a sneer in its voice. "Captain, for your information, this GSV is a demilitarized civilian vessel under the control of the Vavach Hub authorities and within the terms laid down in the Adiran Culture War Conduct Treaty, drawn up shortly after the commencement of hostilities. How..."
"So who turned the lights off and let the air out, idiot?" Hawser said,
turning to the machine briefly. He looked back to the console, turning the bow radar up as high as it would go and taking readings through the blank wall of the rear of the small bay.
"I don't know," the drone said. "But I rather doubt it would be culture agents. Who or what do you think these supposed agents are after? You?"
"What if they were?"
Hawser took another look at the holo display of the GSV's internal layout. He briefly magnified the volume around small bay 27492 before switching the repeater screen off. The drone was silent for a second, then backed off through the doorway.
"Great. I'm locked in an antique with a paranoid lunatic. I think I'll go and look for somewhere safer than this."
"You do that,"
Hawser yelled down the corridor after it. He turned the hangar circuit back on.
"Avager," he said. "I've done it," said the old man's voice. "Right, get to the mess fast and strap in."
Hawser killed the circuit again.
"Well,"
Wubslin said, sitting back in his seat and scratching his head, looking at the bank of screens in front of him with their arrays of figures and graphs. I don't know what it is you're intending to do, Craiglin, but whatever it is, we're as ready as we'll ever be to do it.
The stout engineer looked across at Hawser, lifted himself slightly from his seat and pulled the restraining straps over his body. Hawser grinned at him, trying to look confident. His own seat's restrainers were a little more sophisticated, and he just had to throw a switch for cushioned arms to swing over and inertia fields to come on. He pulled his helmet over his head from the hinged position and heard it hiss shut.
"Oh, my God,"
Wubslin said, looking slowly away from Hawser to stare at the almost featureless rear wall of the small bay shown on the main screen.
"I sure as hell hope you're not going to do what I think you are."
Hawser didn't reply. He hit the button to talk to the mess.
"All right?"
"Just about, Craiglin, but," Yalson said. Hawser killed that circuit, too. He licked his lips, took the controls in his gloved hands, sucked in a deep breath, then flicked the thumb buttons on the cat's three fusion motors. Just before the noise started, he heard Wubslin say,
"Oh my God, you are!"
The screen flashed, went dark, then flashed again. The view of the small bay's rear wall was lit by three jets of plasma bursting from underneath the ship. A noise like thunder filled the bridge and reverberated through the whole craft. The two outboard motors were the main thrust, vectored down for the moment. They blasted fire onto the deck of the small bay, scattering the machinery and equipment from underneath and around the craft, slamming it into walls and off the roof as the blinding jets of flame steadied under the vessel. The inboard lift-only nose motor fired raggedly at first, then settled quickly, starting to burn its own hole through the thin layer of ultra-dense material which covered the small bay floor. The clear air turbulence stirred like a waking animal, groaning and creaking and shifting its weight. On the screen, a huge shadow veered across the wall on the roof in front as the infernal light from the nose fusion motor burned under the ship. Rolling clouds of gas from burning machinery were starting to haze over the view. Hawser was amazed that the walls of the small bay had held out. He flicked the bow laser at the same time as increasing the fusion motor power. The screen detonated with light. The wall ahead burst open like a flower seen in time-lapse. Huge petals throwing themselves toward the ship and a million pieces of wreckage and debris flashing past the vessel's nose on the shockwave of air bursting in from the far side of the lasered wall. At the same time, the clear air turbulence lifted off. The leg weight readouts stopped at zero, then blanked out as the legs, glowing red with heat, stowed themselves inside the hull. Emergency undercarriage cooling circuits whined into action. The craft started to slew to one side, shaking with its own power and with the impact of debris swirling about it. The view ahead cleared. Hawser steadied the ship, then gunned the rear motors, flinging some of their power backward toward the small bay doors. A rear screen showed them glowing white hot. Hawser would dearly have liked to head that way, but reversing and ramming the doors with the cat would have probably been suicidal, and turning the craft in such a confined space impossible. Just going forward was going to be hard enough. The hole wasn't big enough. Hawser saw it coming toward him and knew straight away. He used one shaking finger on the laser beam spread control set in the semi-wheel of the controls, turning the spread up to maximum, then firing once more. The screen washed out with light again, all around the perimeter of the hole. The cat stuck its nose and then its body into another small bay. Hawser waited for something to hit the sides or roof of the white-hot gap, but nothing happened. They sailed through on their three pillars of fire, throwing light and wreckage and waves of smoke and gas before them. The dark waves blasted out over shuttles. The whole small bay they were now moving slowly through was full of shuttles of every shape and description. They were floating over them, battering them and melting them with their fire. Hawser was aware of Wubslin sitting on the seat beside him, his eyes locked onto the view ahead, his legs drawn up as far as possible so that his knees stuck up above the edge of the console and his arms locked in a sort of square over his head, each hand grasping the biceps of the other arm. His face was a mask of fear and incredulity when Hawser turned round to glance at him and grinned. Wubslin pointed frenziedly at the main screen.
"Watch!"
he screeched over the racket. The cat was shaking and bouncing, rocked by the stream of superheated matter pouring from under its hull. It would be using the atmosphere around it to produce plasma now that there was air available, and in the relatively confined space of the small bays, the turbulence created was enough to shake the vessel bodily. There was another wall ahead, coming up faster than Hawser would have liked. They were slewing slightly again as well. He narrowed the laser angle again and fired, pulling the ship round at the same time. The wall flashed once around its edges. The roof and floor of the small bay flashed in loops of flame where the laser caught them,
and dozens of parked shuttles ahead of them pulsed with light and heat. The wall ahead started to fall slowly back, but the cat was coming up on it faster than it was crumpling. Hawser gasped and tried to pull back. He heard Wubslin howl as the vessel's nose hit the undamaged centre of the wall. The view on the main screen tilted as the ship rammed into the wall material. Then the nose came down. The clear air turbulence quivered like an animal shaking water from its fur, and they were rocking and yawing into yet another small bay. It was totally empty. Hawser gunned the engines a little more, took a couple of bursts with the laser at the next wall, then watched in amazement as this wall, instead of falling back like the last one, crashed down toward them like a vast castle drawbridge, slamming in one fiery piece onto the deck of the empty small bay. In a fury of steam and gas, a mountain of water appeared over the top of the collapsing wall and poured out in a huge wave toward the approaching ship. Hawser heard himself shouting. He rammed the motor controls full on and kept the laser fire button hard down. The cat leapt forward. It flashed over the surface of the cascading water, enough of the plasma heat smashing into its liquid surface to instantly fill all the space of small bays its passage had created with a boiling fog of steam. As the tide of water continued to pour from the flooded small bay and the cat screeched above it, the air about the ship filled with superheated steam. The external pressure gauge went up too quickly for the eye to follow. The laser blasted even more vapour off the water in front, and with an explosion like the end of the world, the next wall blew out ahead of the vessel, weakened by the laser and finally blasted away by the sheer pressure of steam. The clear air turbulence shot out from the tunnel of linked small bays like a bullet from a gun. Motors flaming in the middle of a cloud of gas and steam which it quickly outdistanced, it roared into a canyon of air-filled space between towering walls of bay doors and opened accommodation sections, lighting up kilometres of wall and cloud, screaming with its three flamed filled throats and seemingly pulling after it a tidal wave of water and a volcano-like cloud of steam, gas and smoke. The water fell, turning from a solid wave into something like heavy surf, then spray, then just rain and water vapour, following the huge flapping card of the bay door, tumbling through the air. The cat wrenched itself round, twisting and slewing through the air in an attempt to check its headlong rush toward the far wall of small bay doors facing it across that vast internal canyon. Then its motors flickered and went out. The clear air turbulence started to fall. Hawser gunned the controls, but the fusion motors were dead. The screen showed the wall of doors to the other bays on one side, then air and clouds, then the wall of bay doors on the other side. They were in a spin. Hawser looked over at Wubslin as he fought with the controls. The engineer was staring at the main screen with a glazed expression on his face.
"Wubslin!" Hawser screamed.
The fusion motors stayed dead.
"Ah!"
Wubslin seemed to have woken up to the fact that they were falling out of control. He leapt at the controls in front of him.
"Just fly it," he shouted. "I'll try the primers. Must have overpressured the motors."
Hawser wrestled with the controls while Wubslin tried to restart the engines. On the screen, walls spun crazily about them and clouds beneath them were coming up fast. Beneath them, really beneath them, a dead flat layer of clouds. Hawser shook the controls again. The nose motor burst into life, guttering wildly, sending the spinning craft careering off toward one side of the artificial cliff of bay doors and walls. Hawser cut the motor out. He steered into the spin, using the craft's control surfaces rather than the motors. Then he aimed the whole ship straight down and put his fingers on the laser buttons again. The clouds flashed up to meet the vessel. He closed his eyes and squeezed the laser controls. The ends of invention were so huge. It was built on three almost totally separate levels, each over 3 kilometres deep. They were pressure levels. There, because otherwise the differential between the very bottom and the very top of the giant ship would have been the difference between standard sea level and a mountaintop somewhere in the tropopause. As it was, there existed a 3,500-metre difference between the base and roof of each pressure level, making sudden journeys by travel tube from one to the other inadvisable. In the immense open cave that was the hollow centre of the GSV, the pressure levels were marked by force fields, not anything material, so that craft could pass from one level to another without having to go outside the vessel, and it was toward one of those boundaries, marked by cloud, that the clear air turbulence was falling. Firing the laser did no good whatsoever, though Hawser didn't know that at the time. It was a Vavach computer, which had taken over the internal monitoring and control from the culture's own mines, which opened a hole in the force field to let the falling vessel through. It did so in the mistaken assumption that less damage would be caused to the ends of invention by letting the rogue vessel fall through than having it impact. In the centre of a sudden maelstrom of air and cloud, in its own small hurricane, the cat burst through from the thick air at the bottom of one pressure level and into the thin atmosphere at the top of the one below. A vortex of rag-cladded air blew out after it like an inverted explosion. Hawser opened his eyes again and saw with relief the distant floor of the GSV's cavernous interior and the climbing figures on the main fusion motor's monitor screens. He hit the engine throttles again, this time leaving the nose motor alone. The two main engines caught, shoving Hawser back in his seat against the cloying hold of the restrainer fields. He pulled the nose of the diving craft up, watching the floor far below gradually disappear from view, as it was replaced by the sight of another wall of opened bay doors. The doors were much larger than those of the small bays in the level they had just left, and the few craft Hawser could see, either nosing into or appearing out of the lit lengths of the huge hangars, were full-size starships. Hawser watched the screen, piloting the clear air turbulence exactly like an aircraft. They were travelling quickly along a vast corridor over a kilometre across, with a layer of clouds about 1,500 metres above them. Starships were moving slowly through the same space, a few on their own AG fields, most towed by light lifter tugs. Everything else was moving slowly and without a fuss. Only the cat disturbed the calm of the giant ship's interior, screaming through the air on twin swords of brilliant flame pulsing from white-hot plasma chambers. Another cliff face of huge hangar doors faced them. Hawser looked about him at the curve of main screen and pulled the cat over on a long banking left turn, diving a little at the same time to head down an even broader canyon of space. They flashed over a slow-moving clipper being towed toward a distant open main bay, rocking the starship in their wake of superheated air. The wall of doors and opened entrances slanted toward them as Hawser tightened the turn. Ahead, Hawser could see what looked like a cloud of insects, hundreds of tiny black specks floating in the air. Far beyond them, maybe 5 or 6 kilometres away, a 1,000-metre square of blackness, bordered with a slowly flashing strip of subdued white light, was the exit from the ends of invention. It was a straight run. Hawser sighed and felt his whole body relax. Unless they were intercepted, they had done it. With a little luck now, they might even get away from the orbital itself. He gunned the engines, heading for the inky square in the distance. Wobslin suddenly sat forward against the pull of acceleration and punched some buttons. His repeater screen set in the console magnified the centre section of the main screen, showing the view ahead. "They're people!" he shouted. Hawser frowned over at the man.
"What?"
"People! Those are people! They must be in AG harnesses! We're going to go straight through them!"
Hawser looked briefly over at Wobslin's repeater screen. It was true. The black cloud which almost filled the screen was made up of humans flying slowly about in suits or ordinary clothes. There were thousands of them, Hawser saw, less than a kilometre ahead and closing quickly. Wobslin was staring at the screen, waving his hand at the people.
"Get out of the way! Get out of the way!"
he was shouting. Hawser couldn't see a way around, over or beneath the mass of flying people. Whether they were playing some curious mass aerial game or were just enjoying themselves, there were too many, too close, too widespread.
"Shit," Hawser said.
He got ready to cut the rear plasma motors before the clear air turbulence went into the cloud of humans. With luck, they might make it through before they had to relight them and so not incinerate too many people.
"No!"
Wobslin screamed. He threw the restraining straps off, leapt across toward Hawser and dived at the controls. Hawser tried to fend the bulky engineer off, but failed. The controls were wrenched from his hands, and the view on the main screen tipped and swirled, pointing the nose of the speeding ship away from the black square of the GSV exit, away from the huge cloud of airborne people, and toward the cliff of brightly lit main bay entrances. Hawser clouted Wobslin across the head with his arm, sending the man falling to the floor, stunned. He grabbed the controls back from the relaxing fingers of the engineer, but it was too late to turn away. Hawser steadied and aimed. The clear air turbulence darted for an open main bay. It flashed through the open entrance and swept over the skeleton of a starship being rebuilt in the bay, the light from the cat's motors starting fires, singeing hair, smouldering clothes and blinding unprotected eyes. Hawser saw Wobslin lying unconscious on the floor out of the corner of his eye, rocking gently as the cat careered through the half-kilometre length of Main Bay. The doors to the next bay were open, and the next, and the next. They were flying through a 2-kilometre tunnel, racing over the repair and docking facilities of one of Evenouth's displaced shipbuilders. Hawser didn't know what was at the far end, but he could see that before they got there, they would have to fly over the top of a large spaceship which almost filled the third bay along. Hawser vectored the fusion fire ahead so that they started to slow. Twin beams of fire flashed on either side of the main screen as the fusion power kicked forward. Wubslin's unrestrained body slid forward on the floor of the bridge, wedging under the console and his own seat. Hawser lifted the cat's nose as the blunt snout of the parked spacecraft sitting in the bay ahead approached. The clear air turbulence zoomed toward the ceiling of the main bay, flashed between it and the top surface of the ship, then fell on the other side, and, although still slowing, shot through the final main bay and into another corridor of free airspace. It was too narrow. Hawser dived the craft again, saw the floor coming up and fired the lasers. The cat burst through a rising cloud of glowing wreckage, bumping and shaking. Wubslin's squat frame sliding out from under the console and floating back up toward the rear door of the bridge. At first, Hawser thought they were out at last, but they weren't. They were in what the culture called a general bay. The cat fell once more, then levelled out again. It was in a space that seemed even larger than the main interior of the GSV. It was flying through the bay they had stored the megaship in, the same megaship Hawser had seen on the screen earlier being lifted out of the water by 100 or so ancient culture lifter craft. Hawser had time to look around. There was plenty of space, lots of room and time. The megaship lay on the floor of the giant bay, looking for all the world like a small city sitting on a great slab of metal. The clear air turbulence flew past the stern of the megaship, past tunnels full of propeller blades tens of metres across, round the side of its rearmost outrigger, where beached pleasure craft waited for a return to water, over the towers and spires of its superstructure, then out over its bows. Hawser looked forward. The doors, if they were doors, of the general bay faced him 2 kilometres away. They were that same distance from top to bottom and twice that across. Hawser shrugged and checked the laser again. He was becoming, he realised, almost blasé about the whole thing. What the hell, he thought. The lasers picked a hole in the wall of material ahead, punching a slowly widening gap which Hawser aimed straight for. A vortex of swirling air was starting to form around the hole as the cat rushed closer. It was caught in a small horizontal cyclone of air and started to twist. Then it was through and in space. In a quickly dispersing bubble of air and crystals of ice, the craft burst from the body of the General Systems vehicle, swooping into vacuum and star-washed darkness at last. Behind it, a force field slammed across the hole its passage had created in the doors of the General Bay. Hawser felt the plasma motors stutter as their supply of outside air disappeared, then the internal tanks took up the slack. He was about to cut them and slide gently into the startup procedure for the craft's warp engines when the speakers in his headrest crackled.
"This is Evenouth Port Police. All right, you son of a bitch. Just keep on that heading and slow right down. Evenouth Port Police to Rogue Craft. Halt on that heading,
Hawser pulled on the controls, taking the cat on a huge accelerating arc up over the stern of the GSV, flashing past the outside of the kilometre-square exit he'd been heading for earlier. Wubslin, moaning now, bumped around the inside of the bridge as the cat lifted its nose to head straight up toward the maze of abandoned docks and gantries that was Evenouth Port. As it went, it turned, still twisting slightly from the spin it had picked up from the vortex of air bursting from the general bay. Hawser let it twist, steadying it only as they approached the top of the loop, the port facilities coming up fast, then sliding underneath as the craft levelled out.
"Rogue ship, this is your last warning," the speakers blared. "Stop now or we'll blow you out of the sky." "God, he's heading for..."
The transmission cut off. Hawser grinned to himself. He was indeed heading for the gap between the underside of the port and the top of the GSV. The clear air turbulence flashed through spaces between travel tube connections, elevator shafts, graving dock gantries, transit areas, arriving shuttlecraft and crane towers. Hawser guided the ship through the maze with the fusion motors still blazing at maximum boost, throwing the small craft through the few hundred metres of crowded space between the orbital and the General Systems vehicle. The rear radar pinged, picking up following echoes. Two towers hanging under the orbital like upside-down skyscrapers between which Horza was aiming the cat, suddenly blossomed with light, scattering wreckage. Horza cringed in his seat as he corkscrewed the ship into the space between the two clouds of debris.
"Those were across the bows," crackled the speakers again. "The next ones will be straight up your ass, boy racer."
The cat shot out over the dull grey plane of slanting material that was the start of the end's nose. Horza turned the cat over and dived down, following the slope of the vast craft's bows. The rear radar signal stopped briefly, then reappeared. He flipped the ship over again. Wubslin, his arms and legs waving weakly, was dumped onto the cat's bridge ceiling and stuck there like a fly, while Horza did a section of an outside loop. The ship was racing, powering away from the orbital port area and the big GSV, heading for space. Horza remembered about Balvader's gear and quickly reached over to the console, closing the vac tube circuit from there. A screen showed that all the vac tubes had been rotated. The rear screen showed something flame inside the twin plumes of plasma fire. The rear radar pinged insistently.
"Goodbye, stupid," the voice in the headrest speakers said.
Horza threw the ship to one side. The rear screen went white, then black. The main screen pulsated with colours and broken lines. The speakers in Horza's helmet, as well as the speakers set into the seat, howled. Every instrument on the console flashed and wavered. Horza thought for a second they had been hit. But the motors were still blasting, the main screen was starting to clear, and the other instruments were recovering too. The radiation meters were bleeping and flashing. The rear screen stayed blank. A damage monitor indicated that the sensors had been knocked out by a very strong pulse of radiation. Horza started to realize what had happened when the rear radar didn't start pinging again after it recovered. He threw back his head and laughed. There had indeed been a bomb in Balvader's kit bag. Whether it had gone off because it was caught in the cat's plasma exhaust or because somebody, whoever had been trying to keep the ship on board the GSV in the first place, had detonated it remotely the instant the fleeing craft was far enough away from the ends not to cause too much damage, Horza didn't know. Whatever, the explosion seemed to have caught the pursuing police vessels. Laughing uproariously, Horza angled the cat further away from the great circle of brilliantly lit orbital, heading straight out toward the stars and readying the warp engines to take over from the plasma motors. Wubslin, back on the deck, one leg caught on the arm of his own chair, moaned distantly.
"Mother," he said. "Mother, say it's only a dream."
Horza laughed louder.
"You lunatic,"
breathed Yelsen, shaking her head. Her eyes were wide.
"That was the craziest thing I've ever seen you do. You're mad, Craiglin. I'm leaving. I resign as of now. Shit. I wish I'd gone with Jandrilla Jelly to Galsel. You can just drop me off first place we get to."
Horza sat down wearily in the seat at the head of the messroom table. Yelsen was at the far end, under the screen which was switched into the bridge main screen. The cat was proceeding under full warp, 2 hours out on its journey from Vavach. There had been no further pursuit following the destruction of the police craft, and now the cat was gradually coming round to the course Horza had set, into the war zone, toward the edge of the glitter cliff, toward Shah's world. Dorilo and Avager were sitting, plainly still shaken, to one side of Yelsen. The woman and the elderly man were both staring at Horza as though he was pointing a gun at them. Their mouths were open. Their eyes were glazed. On the other side of Yelsen, the slack form of Peristek Balvader was leaning forward, head down, her body pulling against the restraining straps of the seat. The messroom was chaotic. The cat hadn't been readied for violent manoeuvring, and nothing had been stowed away. Plates and containers, a couple of shoes, a glove, some half-unraveled tapes and spools and various other bits and pieces now lay strewn about the floor of the mess. Yelsen had been hit by something, and a small trickle of blood had dried on her forehead. Horza hadn't let anybody move, apart from brief visits to the heads, for the last 2 hours. He told everybody to stay where they were over the ship PA, while the cat headed away from Vavach on a twisting, erratic course. He'd kept the plasma motors and laser warm and ready, but no further pursuit came. Now he reckoned they were safe and far enough away to warp straight. He had left Wubslin on the bridge, nursing the battered and abused systems of the clear air turbulence as best he could. The engineer had apologized for grabbing at the controls and had become very subdued, not meeting Hawes's eyes, but tidying up one or two bits of loose debris on the bridge and stuffing some of the loose wires back under the console. Hawser told Wobslin he had nearly killed them all, but on the other hand, so had he, so they would forget it this time. They'd escaped intact. Wobslin nodded and said he didn't know how. He couldn't believe the ship was virtually undamaged. Wobslin wasn't undamaged. He had bruises everywhere.
"I'm afraid," Hawser said to Yalson once he had sat down and put his feet up. "Our first port of call is rather bleak and underpopulated. I'm not sure you'll want to be dropped off there."
Yalson put the heavy stun pistol down onto the table surface.
"And just where the hell are we going? What's going on, Cricklin? What was all that craziness back on the GSV? What's she doing here? Why is the culture involved?"
Yalson nodded at Balveda during this speech, and Hawser kept looking at the unconscious culture agent when Yalson stopped, waiting for an answer. Avager and Duralo were looking at him expectantly too. Before Hawser could answer, the small drone appeared from the corridor leading from the accommodation section. It floated in, looked round the mess room, then sat itself bodily on the table in the middle.
"Did I hear something about it being explanation time?" it said.
It was facing Hawser. Hawser looked away from Balveda to Avager and Duralo, then to Yalson and the drone.
"Well, you might as well all know that we are now heading for a place called Shah's World. It's a planet of the dead."
Yalson looked puzzled.
Avager said, "I've heard of those, but we won't be allowed in."
"This is getting worse," the drone said. "If I were you, Captain Cricklin, I would turn back to the ends of invention and surrender yourself there. I'm sure you'd get a fair trial."
Hawser ignored the machine. He sighed, looking round at the mess, stretched his legs and yawned.
"I'm sorry you're all being taken, perhaps against your will, but I've got to go there, and I can't afford to stop anywhere to let you off. You've all got to come."
"Oh, we do we?" said the small drone.
"Yes," Hawser said, looking at it. "I'm afraid so." "But we won't be able to get anywhere near this place," Avager protested. "They don't let anybody in. There's some sort of zone around them they don't let people into." "We'll see about that when we get there,"
Hawser smiled.
"You're not answering my questions," Yalson said.
She looked at Balveda again, then down at the gun lying on the table.
"I've been zapping this poor bitch every time she flicks an eyelid, and I want to know why I've been doing it."
"It'll take a while to explain it all, but what it boils down to is there's something on Shah's world which both the culture and the Adirans want. I have a contract, a commission from the Adirans to get there and find this thing."
"You really are a paranoid," the drone said incredulously.
It rose off the table and turned round to look at the others.
"He really is a lunatic. The Adirans are hiring us, you, to go after something?"
Yalson's voice was full of disbelief. Hawser looked at her and smiled.
"You mean this woman," Duralo said, pointing at Balveda, "was sent by the culture to join us, infiltrate. Are you serious?"
"I'm serious. Balveda was looking for me. Also for Hawser Gobachul. She wanted to get to Shah's world or to stop us from getting there."
Hawser looked at Avager.
"There was a bomb in among her gear, by the way. It went off just after I rotated it out of the tubes. It blew the police ships away. We all got a blast of radiation, but nothing lethal."
"And what about Hawser?" Yalson said, looking grimly at him. "Was that just some trick, or did you really meet him?"
"He is alive, Yalson, and as safe as any of us."
Wobslin appeared through the door from the bridge, still with an apologetic look on his face. He nodded at Hawser and sat down nearby.
"All looking fine, Cricklin."
"Good," Hawser said. "I was just explaining to everybody else about our journey to Shah's world."
"Oh," Wobslin said. "Yeah."
He shrugged at the others.
"Cricklin," Yalson said, leaning forward on the table and looking intently at Hawser. "You just about got us all killed fuck knows how many times back there. You probably did kill quite a few people during those indoor aerobatics. You've saddled us with some secret agent from the culture. You're practically kidnapping us to take us toward a planet in the middle of a war zone where nobody's even allowed in to look for something both sides want enough to... Well, if the Adirans are hiring a decimated bunch of second-rate mercenaries, they must be pretty desperate.
Any of the culture really was behind the attempt to keep us in that bay. They must be scared stiff to risk violating the neutrality of the Ents and breaking some of their precious rules of war. You may think you know what's going on and think the risk is worth it, but I don't. And I don't like this feeling of being kept in the dark at all, either. Your track record recently has been crap. Let's face it, risk your own life if you want to, but you don't have any right to risk ours too, not anymore. Maybe we don't all want to side with the Adirans, but even if we did prefer them to the culture, none of us signed up to start fighting in the middle of the war. Shit, Cricklin. We're neither equipped nor trained well enough to go up against those guys.
I know all that, Horza said. But we shouldn't be encountering any battle forces. The quiet barrier around Shah's world extends far enough out so that it's impossible to watch it all. We go in from a randomly picked direction. By the time we're spotted, there's nothing anybody can do about it. No matter what sort of ship they have, a main battle fleet couldn't keep us out. When we leave, it will be the same.
What you're trying to say is, Yalson said, sitting back in her seat, easy in, easy out.
Maybe I am, laughed Horza.
Hey, Whoopslin said suddenly, looking at his terminal screen, which he had just taken from his pocket. It's nearly time. He got up and disappeared through the doors leading to the bridge. In a few seconds, the screen in the mess changed, the view swivelling round until it showed Vavach. The great orbital hung in space, dark and brilliant, full of night and day, blue and white and black. They all looked up at the screen. Webslin came back in and sat in his seat again. Horza felt tired. His body wanted rest and lots of it. His brain was still buzzing from the concentration and the amount of adrenaline it had required to pilot the cat through and out of the Ends of Invention. But he couldn't rest yet. He couldn't decide what was the best thing to do. Should he tell them who he was? Tell them the truth, that he was a changer, that he had killed Cricklin? How loyal were any of them to the leader they didn't yet know was dead? Yalson, the most, perhaps. But surely she would be glad to know that he was alive. Yet she was the one who had said that perhaps they weren't all on the Adirans' side.